Dick is my supervisor, or some of the work you've been doing with my sub-supervisors, Christoph and John. And so today I'm going to talk about how non-thermal processes affect the intercluster medium and the angular power spectrum of the scenario. And we also looked at some, in collaboration with Deborah Sajaki, looked at some EGM feedback work. So I was going to give an introduction, but my introduction probably won't be as detailed and thorough as the introduction we just got from Dick. So thanks, Dick. Go over the motivation for our, a little slide on the motivation for our work, our method, go over some simulations, power simulations, details, and power results. But if you're tired, because it's fairly early in the morning, you want to go to sleep, it's fine. If you get anything away from this talk, is that we, with our large sample or large statistics clusters from our hydrodynamic simulations, with variance physics, we show that a very simple fit describes the, our average pressure profile for the ICM. And I mean, this was also mentioned yesterday by Daisuke. The pressure profiles actually are fairly well behaved for a large mass range of clusters. So, motivation for our talk, it was mentioned in the questions. SPT, ACT, Planck will all get really good power spectra out to high L. And the errors on the measurements of sigma 8 will not be measurement errors from the observations will be errors within how we can theoretically determine what the angle or theoretical models for the angular power spectrum are. This will limit our ability to tell you or determine what sigma 8 is. So this is our motivation, is to try and nail down a better theoretical model for determining the angular power spectrum. And our other motivation is to understand the current results from the high L power spectrum from, say, CBI and from that. So this is just a quick refresher. This is the Hamel formalism for the angular power spectrum, or it's called the Schott formalism. So the physics comes in the form factor over here, and it's actually most of it just meets right here, which is called Y3D, but it's essentially the scale pressure, the scale electron pressure. So this is a 1D pressure profile. Okay. So the uncertainties in our angular power spectrum come from our inability to really nail down the pressure profile and understand what's going on in the ICM and what are some non-thermal contributions to the intercluster medium. So we're talking about the cosmic wave, galactic wind, turbulence, AGM feedback, and possibly magnetic field. So there are three possible ways we can attack the problem: observations, analytics, but we have chosen to do simulations. Now, there has been, we heard yesterday some of the problems with simulations. They're not perfect, but we're gonna say this is the best plan of attack for attacking the problem. So our simulations, we have SPH cosmological simulations from Gadget 2 and Gadget 3. We have two types of simulations. We have a high-res sample of Zoom simulations, and we have a cosmological box sample, or many cosmological box samples, with multiple sets of physics that were simulated. So we have prescriptive for cooling star formation, galactic winds, and cosmic rays. And so finally, we also looked at our simulations at the redshift evolution of the pressure profile. At here's just a table outlining some of the simulations we've done. Here's a high-resolution simulation that are simulated by Christoph. And these are six cube block simulations, which are physics, nonlinear physics, cosmic gradient physics, and star formation, radiant wings, gradient cosmic gradient, star formation, cosmic gradient, and supernova ejection, cosmic gradient, and finally, as they called it, our state-of-the-art simulation is simulation of radiation, winds, cosmic rays, and cosmic rays. So, all these simulations are probably going to sort of head suffer from an overcooling problem in the center, and we even ran a 128 cube simulation check to see if this is... So we have a formalism for cosmic rays in our, so Christoph described the,
I'll talk to you.
Okay. So right now we've run all our 256 cube box simulations, which actually with the computing power C that can take that long, and we're in the current process of running 512 simulations to get larger statistics and bigger clusters. Because the clusters that we don't have 256 cubes aren't very big. Well, they're big, just not that big. We like their bigger clusters, but we use the high resolution sample as our sample to compare against for large clusters. So here's just these are snapshots from our 256 cube box simulation. This is the top row here, the bus that we picked out of our 256 cube sample. This is the adiabatic projection of this electron projected pressure, or Compton Y map. And this is for our non-radiative simulation, and this is our state-of-the-art simulation and everything in. And you can't really see the difference here, so we have to go to a different map over here. And what you see is that this map and this map, you see that the non-radiative simulation actually has a higher Compton Y pressure. So there's just more pressure. So now the bottom panel is the same cluster at redshift 4. So what it would look like at redshift 4. Totally important. And you can see we're going to look at the difference and average over annuli. We don't actually get that much of a difference. It's actually there's a difference in terms of the amplitude. And what you see is kind of a dipole effect, which probably due to dynamics. I can't actually show you the dynamics, but these are just a snapshot of our simulation or a cluster from the simulation. So here's the pressure profile. So we have, this is at redshift 0, we have applied pressure over called T200. It's not actually pressure at 200, it's more just a computer point, it's just like an average pressure at the zero radii. And what I applied here, so the points are our box simulation. The dotted lines are the cooling simulations, which are very specific. These are high-res simulations. And the solid lines are also high-res simulations. And they also so there's, we have 14 high-res clusters, and about, in comparison to about 480 stacked clusters in our box. And you can see the discrepancy. So this is, the points here are for a cooling simulation, the standard cooling simulation, our cooling box simulation. And so we want to compare them to the dashed line here. And what you can see is there's a huge discrepancy in the center. This is probably due to overfilling and some of these But when we get up to higher radii, the difference between the two cooling simulations and the high res box is actually about 20%, which is fairly flat. So at about 0.5 R of R here, or R200, and it's flat, so the profile fall off the same way. And the difference is about 20%. So where does that 20% come from? So well, we looked at star fractals. So this is fractional stars versus fractional baryons. Top the point zero high res simulations, and the lines are box simulations. You can see there's a large discrepancy in the fractional stars that are produced in the simulations, and the difference is also about 20%. So here, or fractional stars and fractional baryons. And just a note, half these stars, this is the total stars within R200, half the stars are at the center, so it's not that many. And there seems to be some sort of lack of convergence with the prescription, so the higher res you go, the more stars you seem to
win. So
these are our box simulations. So they are lower res than Sinead, and these are high res simulations simulated by Crystal.
Are some of the same bus?
No, these are all different buses.
The Zooms aren't the extract of the box?
No, the Zooms are from a previous dark matter simulation.
Much more.
Oh, it's more really not far enough for 105 many parts. Yes. So, I'm going to go back to this overcooling problem. So this is, I have plotted all 480 clusters from our box simulation. And so the points are, this is our average here, and this is the scatter. Now, we point out, this here is all cut out when we compute our average and scatter. This is due to resolution effects, because our resolution in the box simulation is about 24 parsecs. So for the smaller clusters, we actually don't resolve the centers and therefore get warmer. For a cutout, there's also some overcooling going on. But you can see very, very, very nice height agreement. Or after we do a four cutter. And this is just a very simple scale, like I said, to E200, R200. This is probably due to, say, turbulent and falling right together. Yes, all the shocks and et cetera. So this is. Yes. Yes. So this is something we would like to understand, and looking at maybe some sort of turbulent pressure support, which we mentioned yesterday.
But since you're overcooling, that
feature
also overcooling from. No. You showed that in the float where there were different stages of flow. Does it continue behind the pipes?
So.
Could you show us?
Yeah, so there is
cooling to the
We are saying yes. This is probably due to the extra cooling in the high res simulations.
But then
I've mentioned this overcooling problem a lot. As Christoph mentioned yesterday, there has been a solution to, or a possible solution to the simulating solutions to the overcooling problem in simulations. And this is AGM feedback work done by Jackie et al. So what I have here is one of the high-res clusters that we've simulated. This is just a regular simulation, and this is Deborah's simulation with AGM feedback. So this is thermal feedback. And so her prescription is just, she sees the halo of the black hole. She has some estimate for Bondi foil accretion, and she has two modes, either a quasar mode or a mechanical mode.
Yes, don't say Bondi foil. But Bondi foil, these are the conditions of the outer boundary. If it goes up to black hole, then the efficiency of accretion will be zero. There should be this for subject of the star. Because in opposite case, you will not get it.
So, yeah.
But on the boundary, it's easier to simulate, to say, oh, accretion is this and then high efficiency. But you could say Bondi foil and high efficiency. That's semantics.
Okay. So, you can see the difference actually in the Compton Y map or the integrated pressure in the here, but we also get a different map.
So, sorry, can I go back to that? I mean, it's an efficiency issue. And so it's just
the
formula. Yeah, no, I know what.
But in addition, if you have even small angular momentum, finally someday you will be deep or, you know, some another type of flow, and then you have efficiency, right? But we need something, we need many orders of magnitude deviate from Bondi foil.
Yeah, I mean, but on the other hand, quasars know how to do that.
Or they know.
So we might require the simulational developing quasars to do the same thing.
No,
I know. So why not? I mean, the thing that's surprising is that epsilon. Well, epsilon's about 0.1 would be sort of a standard assumption. I don't know if she's done that, has she?
They took all 0.1.
Yeah, okay. But, so they it's just the misnomer.
This is just external conditions.
Yeah, exactly.
How much maximal amount of mass did they put into the vehicle?
So an estimate of
accretion rate.
Yeah. And which is two modes and the mechanical mode of feedback. So this is a different map. A deficit in the center where feedback is taking place, and you can see how the simulation accounts for this deficit in the center and the increment on the outer.
Quasar mode and mechanical mode?
So quasar mode is, it's determined by the rate of efficiency compared to Eddington.
Okay.
So if it's higher than 1%, Eddington, then it's in quasar mode, and there's no actual feedback on the ICM. And if it's in mechanical mode, then there's feedback.
But isn't one dominated by radiation and the other one dominated by mechanical energy? I mean, that's the fundamental difference.
This right. Mm-hmm.
And I also to comment on Rashid's point, I think the point of this is that the efficiency is no longer 10%, because what happens is the gas gets hung up, so your effective efficiency with Bondi foil drops. So it might be much less than 10% because it's
not. Might be 10 pound minus 8.
It could be. It could
yes,
be
if
very
you
low.
Just a few dollars,
and
it
just
pump
these things in the center of a simulation, mm-hmm. and then just let the thing run, and there's no guarantee that it has anything to do with.
Well, that was my question of whether they used a more complicated epsilon than them.
Oh, they just were using epsilon 0.1 and this was wrong. And then they were telling, okay, when accretion is much lower than Eddington accretion for high efficiency. Then you are just putting 20% of energy into mechanics. And this is all, no radiation.
But the problem with revolutions, you can only resolve in these simulations 5 kiloparsecs.
Yes.
So that's by far orders of magnitude larger than the risk case you need to resolve. So what do you do?
And 20, it's good because they even cannot find the effects which Jerry Spriker and in our group we consider just radiation heating. Because quasar also is heating gas by the recoil from hot strands, but it is much smaller region. It's only 5-10 kiloparsec, which is nothing in this region.
But
Okay. So the AGM feedback is not really the focus. It was just.
But it's also interesting.
It is something we would like to get a better handle on. And so she also simulated feedback with cosmic rays in the bubbles instead of thermal. You can see the deficit is actually bigger. Go back. So deficit in the center is bigger, and you get a larger adjustment in the outer regions of the cluster. Now this is actually, you know, an exaggeration of what might happen. This is a pretty small cluster. This is 9 × 10^13 MSOL over H. So if it's a bigger cluster, it probably won't have an effect, as was mentioned before.
But may I ask you here, because it is already a question not to because when you are speaking about cosmic ray filled bubbles, it is not the cosmic rays which are heating gas. It's just mechanical energy because bubbles are going up in the cluster, just due to buoyancy, because they're light. They have huge pressure, but they have very small mass. And this mechanical energy is heating and giving entropy.
So how does this look when we look at the pressure profiles? So the black is the cooling. This is just, you know, strictly average pressure profile, or integrated pressure profiles. Black is our cooling. The blue is the thermal feedback, and the red is the feedback with cosmic rays. And so you can see a large deficit in the center, and we actually get, as we saw in the difference maps, it's accounted for, let's say, in the outer regions. So the pressure is actually higher in the outer regions because it's been pushed out. So this is something we need to address. We would like a subgrid model for this. This simulation took a lot of time, and it was on a very small cluster. We would like to do this on a cosmological scale with where the resolution isn't quite as good. So we need some sort of subgrid physics model to try and nail this down, and we haven't come up with one yet.
Where is the energy being injected in this model?
In the center.
Just in the center.
Yeah. Well, wherever there is a black hole accreting, there's energy injected. So there are other, if we go back, these are probably other C black holes of halos that are falling in, and they are also injecting energy.
Well, how do you put black holes in?
They run a friends of friends on the fly, and they seed the halos with a black hole of an appropriate mass.
So you use the bulge mass, black hole mass relation.
At all redshifts, like as soon as you form a halo, you stick a black hole, assuming the relation?
Yes. Well, I don't do it, so this is what Deborah does.
I put the blame on Deborah.
Is there any sort of normalization of the sort of the frequency with which you're adding these black holes with, for example, the known population of radio sources?
So I believe she addresses this in her paper. There is a black hole, a mass function as a function of time, and this is addressed in the paper. I'm not.
But you don't do this in your code?
So this is not done. This is something we're going to try and do. This is not what we've done in our simulations.
Okay.
So our simulations. I thought I was going to quit. Our simulations. We're going to focus now back on the box simulations and comparing the difference, how the different physics. Or how the physics we put into our simulation compares. So we have our four cosmological box simulations, 256-2, and you can see, so the black point plotted here is just the radiator simulation. So then the curves, the green, red, and so the blue is the non-radiative, green is the radiative with winds, red is radiative, or our state-of-the-art simulation, as Dick likes to call it. So you can see there's a large discrepancy in between cooling and non-cooling. This was pointed out already by Benske, and the actual cosmic rays and the winds have a very little effect if you compare.
Supernova. Yes.
Well, this is supernova injected cosmic rays. Have very little effect, if you can see.
here. This is a difference between the pressures and the plot error bars here. You probably they would fall within the error bars, whereas the adiabatic is above. You can see that over here.
But you do have just thermal like feedback from supernovae.
That's the wind. So it's galactic feedback.
Negative front. This is basically star formation and supernova feedback. That's always included. Otherwise, you don't get the zero color right. That is correct.
So getting to our fits that we did. So as Vic mentioned, we have a modified beta fit that we have applied to these pressure profiles. So the difference between the standard beta model is the fact that our R over R core is no longer squared, and that's about it. So we'll tell you how we came up with that, but it's quite amusing. So here is it.
You don't want to know.
Here is a comparison between the data model and our model. So our model is the blue. So here's black is obviously data points again. So the blue is our model. See, it fits a lot nicer than, say, the red, which is the standard data model.
Well,
ignore the green for now. It's not there. I would just like to point out that our pressure profiles are not, we don't discriminate between relaxed and unrelaxed clusters. It's everything, and we put it all in there. So we don't have to determine between relaxed and unrelaxed.
So can you remind me what P200 was?
P200 is like an integrated pressure at 200 or
integrated pressure.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, moving on, we're getting to our redshift evolution. So we looked at these clusters as a function of redshift, and what we see is as we go back in redshift, clusters actually become, there's actually a decrease in the central pressure, and the clusters actually become slightly fluffier. You can't really see that here, but you can see it when we actually apply our fits, and I'll show you plots of our fits as a function of redshift. So they become fluffier, and you can see they also become steeper, so they fall off faster as you get up to higher radii. So two questions came up when we looked at this plot. Is this an influence of a lot of the smaller clusters? Because we have a lot of them, right, in comparison to the high-mass clusters in our simulation. So we want to see if this trend is still the same in the high-mass clusters and it's not driven by the small-mass clusters. And we want to know what is sort of driving this, why is the pressure doing this as a function of pressure?
So high redshift, the concentration parameters in the NFW are smaller, so they are less concentrated.
Yes,
so
you're
going to
see
that. Yes, so that's coming. So here we actually looked in the mass bin. So this is one of our higher mass bins. So it's 2 × 10⁴ solar masses to 3 × 10⁴ solar masses. So you can see our need for 512 cube bigger box simulations. And you can see this is the plot that I showed before. We still have the same trends where you get a steeper falling off at higher redshift and you have a decrease at in the core or at our P. So this is not driven by the low mass clusters. We see it in all clusters. So what could be driving this? Well, we looked at the temperature profiles, and indeed the temperature profiles have the same trend as a function of redshift, so they seem to be, you know, falling in the core, and they are steeper as we go up to higher radii. So temperature seems to be doing the same thing. So here's our, quickly jumping ahead, here's our fits. Here's to remind you of our formula for the fits as a function of redshift. So you can see, as we saw in the plots, our central pressure is dropping as a function of redshift. It's, we don't fully understand why it's doing this, and we're looking into that. We notice, so when we put R core over
R200, we notice an increase. So you can think of this as an inverse concentration. So this, and this actually follows very nicely the same. But this is the gas, so it's not, right? This is the gas, so the gas seems to be doing something very similar to the dark matter.
But it's hydrostatic variable in the center, right? So gas doesn't know about dark matter.
It knows about it, but the fitting formula differs. So the way the fits occur, it may be that RC would adjust itself to deal with its flattening in the optimal way. So it's not clear that it's perfect. That is to say, you shouldn't use the concentration is determined for the dark matter in
that's true.
In
yeah,
trips.
True. Yeah, the opposite.
That's right.
And our you know, how we fall off in our profile, it increases. And you can actually see that the non-radiative, as you go to higher redshift, actually goes to the almost to 5/3. So suggest, you know, adiabatic compression is the dominant factor at higher redshifts. This is just a quick, you know, this is a YM relation. We saw lots of them yesterday. Our slope is 5/3 as it should be, and we actually have these as functions of redshift. But I ran out of time to show them. So here's our final plot, as Dick put up. These are the CLs. So we, with our model, we included. So there was a question: what is dotted and solid? So the dotted is when we included the redshift evolution in our fits, which we plugged into a code provided to us by GeeTrack, which is used in the ACT pipeline. So you can see when we put in the redshift evolution, there's actually an increase because the clusters are getting fluffier, et cetera. So this is, you know, a work in progress. So besides, you know, that's one of the concluding things, and this is still a work to be done. And this is my summary. Thank you.
Questions?
Have you compared the pressure profile sort of derived from the X-ray data?
No, we haven't compared anything to data. That's on a long list of things to do, but we will.
Yeah. Have you looked at the universality of the Fourier transform of your profiles instead of doing position space, doing it in L space, since that's where the power spectrum is?
So this was originally one of the things we were looking at was the actual form factor. The problem with that when you have a large sample is you have to image them all. You get the centers of them. So, you know, that takes a lot more time than just, you know, making pressure profiles. And so when you're dealing with numbers like 480 clusters, then it becomes
so what's the difference between the Fourier transform? I mean, one is universal, the other is universal.
Well, it's just, you know, if you have 20% differences here and there in your profile in real space, in Fourier space, they could actually add coherently. So you could have 20% differences here and there in your radial profile.
Absolutely.
That in Fourier space could turn into a 50% difference if they add up.
So the curious thing, if you just... You saw in the plot of the standard beta profile with the R squared 3 beta over 2 compared to this. The surprising thing is that in Fourier space, it's actually got, you know, it moves things around because of the gentleness of the fit that we're using now relative to the standard beta. And so, you know, you see actually quite a remarkable difference between them, which you say, well, wait a minute, they don't look that different in the... in the position space, but because Fourier transform is taken a bit from here and a bit from here and a bit from here, it actually is amplifying the difference, which is exactly the point you're making, and that's obviously what our target is. But for the CL issue, anyway.
Last question?
So, have you thought about putting thermal conduction into the models and seeing how that affects things? Or maybe you have, and you're smiling.
In order to do this right, we have to run actually an MHD simulation cluster, and to fully actually sort of do this, because this seems to be crucial in getting this right. And if you don't do this, then you only, and if you do just the spherical or the sort of isotropic approximation, you might get completely wrong results. And this is what we've seen in a paper by Ugigas et al. And Dolak et al. They did it, and they get completely different results. And then most possibly due to this effect that isotropic versus the anisotropic conduction.
What you're describing, Christoph, is an impossible problem to solve because
this
depends on the morphology of the magnetic
yes.
field.
Yep.
So that says that this will really never be a solved problem. But the limiting case of putting in...
Well, some people do it already. But,
well, of course. But, you know,
but like these differences between the radiative and the cooling case, you have to worry about what it's doing to the profile on large scales, I would
yes.
think. Where, especially where the temperatures are hot.
It's for the very high temperature.
Yes.
So it's relevant.
Yes.
Without the magnetic field complication, it's easy to put into SPA. So
yeah,
something that can be done straightforward.
This has been done already.
Yeah.
But most probably the result is actually not quite relevant to true clusters because of the anisotropic nature of conduction in a true cluster. And the instabilities associated with actually the anisotropic conduction, magnetothermal instabilities, heat flux frame boiling instability.
That's central aspects.
No. The magnetic thermal instability is actually operating on large scales, whereas the heat flux frame buoyant instability is operating in the cool core region, shutting off thermal conduction, as being shown by Parrish and Water, actually. So that basically this is an effect that actually sort of where your sort of final state of your magnetic fields that evolve are becoming tangential rather than. Than radial. That means they shut off solar conduction towards the center.
At the end of the day, they can come up with some effective conductivity coefficient.
Yeah.
Which so
is...
That can be implemented just for cosmological
but
just for...
The problem being that every... The very source of turbulence that you basically have that shuts the magnetic field and you have to wait for a certain time until the instability sets in again, and this is what you want to do right. Otherwise, you might not get the right answer. Or you could get out what you put in. But
in agreement with you, you should be able to do some subgrid approximation to this, but with a mean effect, if not.
Mm-hmm.
But you're talking about a fine res simulation to see the full dynamics of it, but you know, just to move around some thermal energy, it's probably not as crucial, but you have to modify things. I mean, that's what I would expect. Because, you know, I mean, you know, you have this wrapping up complex magnetic field, which is true, it's got anisotropic conduction, but on average, it's probably a suppressed 3D conduction coefficient. You're saying, no way, Jose.
I think there might be,
sorry to interrupt. Why don't we thank Nick again?
So let's break for coffee, and please come back at 11.